Today, on this last Sunday in Lent, we have the fourth of our sermons about Christian heroes. I've chosen four Christian heroes for us to hear about on these four Sundays in Lent, apart from Mothering Sunday, last Sunday, that is. And today we hear about C.S. Lewis, who was a Christian writer and an apologist working in the middle of the 20th century. His writings are still widely read and appreciated today. There is a C.S. Lewis society in almost every English-speaking country, and especially in America. He is still hugely popular, especially among conservative Christians. In this country, his popularity is not confined to conservative Christians. Rowan Williams, for example, has written a book and given several outstanding lectures about C.S. Lewis and his writings and his impact. What is a Christian apologist? There was a very good recent film called Freud's Last Session, which came out in 2024, last year, starring Anthony Hopkins as Freud and Matthew Good as C.S. Lewis. It's based on the idea, which apparently is true, that Freud, during the last few months of his life here in London, was visited by a young Don from Oxford, but no one really ever said who this young Don was. And the filmmakers of this film thought it might have been C.S. Lewis, the two great thinkers of the 20th century meeting and discussing their work. So this is, in a sense, a film about a fictional meeting, but it's beautifully written, and one of the lines I picked up is that just before C.S. Lewis was expected to arrive at Freud's house in North London, Freud says to his daughter, "I'm expecting C.S. Lewis, that famous Christian apologist. I suppose he has a lot to apologize for." One wonders what Freud had in mind. The years and years of Christian-promoted anti-Semitism that finally prevented Christians from putting a stop to the Holocaust, or the perceived Christian repression of our sexual urges that Freud talked so much about and so eloquently in his work. A Christian apologist is someone who makes intellectual and emotional sense of the Christian faith in the face of those who oppose it and those who feel themselves very unconvinced, especially in the light of the contemporary scientific worldviews. And C.S. Lewis was good at that. He was convinced that adopting the Christian faith for yourself could be made sense of, and it was, in fact, not irrational at all. In fact, it was the only sensible and coherent decision you can take in your life. C.S. Lewis wrote textbooks about the Christian faith, such as Mere Christianity. He wrote children's fantasy, such as the Narnia series, including The Famous Lion and The Witch and the Wardrobe, still popular with filmmakers today and with people of all ages. He wrote some science fiction, and he wrote didactic literature, such as the Screwtape Letters, which are subtitled as Letters from a Senior Devil, Screwtape, to his nephew Wormwood, a junior tempter. A satire largely on the subject of temptation and resistance to it. C.S. Lewis wrote two significant books that deal with the theme of suffering and pain. His first book, The Problem of Pain, and then the book A Grief Observed. For a Christian apologist, this is a crucial subject to tackle. It is the most urgent question that we all face. Why does our all-loving God allow so much suffering in the world? The Problem of Pain was written in 1940. This book is a philosophical and theological exploration of why a loving and all-powerful God allows pain and suffering in this world. Lewis argues that pain can serve as a transformative force, helping individuals to surrender their wills to God and recognize their dependence on Him. He suggests that pain can be a megaphone through which God communicates with humanity, rousing people from their complacency. In many ways, this is quite a theoretical book, proposing and explaining one particular theodicy. Theodicy is trying to explain why a loving God allows suffering. And he explains one theodicy of why suffering is present in this good God-created world. 20 years later, in 1961, he wrote a book, Grief Observed, which is quite a different take on a very similar subject. How can this difference be accounted for? For this, we need to remind ourselves of the only profound upheaval in Lewis's adult life. Most of the time, Lewis lived the life of a confirmed bachelor don in Oxford, possibly slightly autistic and unable to form loving relationships. But one of his correspondents was an American divorcee by the name of Joy Davidman. She was in trouble with the British immigration authorities, and C.S. Lewis agreed to marry her as a marriage of convenience to stabilize her immigration status here in Britain. And subsequent to their civil marriage of convenience, Joy fell seriously ill with cancer, and Lewis started looking after her. During this period, and much to Lewis's own surprise, they fell very, very deeply in love. It was when Joy died that Lewis started writing his second book on suffering, in some places contradicting his earlier work, in some places complementing it. A Grief Observed is a deeply personal and emotional reflection on grief and suffering. It presents a more introspective and questioning perspective on pain, as Lewis grapples with the intense emotional pain of losing the woman he had learned to love so much. The book is often seen as a more vulnerable and honest exploration of suffering compared to the more rational approach in The Problem of Pain. For me, it is his fiction, though, which continues to leave me with the biggest impact. In his science fiction, Lewis explores future worlds with false gods. These are frightening visions of what humans are capable of when not constrained by belief in a moral god. But most enjoyable for children and adults alike, and certainly for me, are his fantasies about Narnia. A world into which children can enter through an old cupboard, the famous wardrobe, and which is a world where it is always winter, but never Christmas. These fantasies, which are possibly his most lasting amongst his literary output, they were not liked by his best friend Tolkien, with whom he met regularly as they were reading to each other from their writings. Tolkien, as you know, had been developing a whole mythology around his Middle Earth in his books about The Hobbit and The Lord of the Ring. This was a coherent mythological world, even with languages that Tolkien himself invented. He found C.S. Lewis's fantasies intolerable, with its random mixture of mythology, classical fauns, dyads, northern European giants and dwarfs, and, to add insult to injury, even Father Christmas. And yet, Lewis did not write a mythology, of course, but a fantasy. And what is more, a fantasy that elucidated the Christian faith in a new narrative form. To cut a very, very long story short, the children in the world of Narnia put their hope and their trust in the lion Aslan, whom they have never seen and of whom they have only heard rumors. And in the final battle, Aslan, so much longed for, does appear and save the day and unfreezes the wintry world, but dies in the process. And this is where our series of Lent sermons end. I hope this last one has inspired you to read a book by C.S. Lewis. I hope that the whole series has inspired us to think anew about the significance of our faith in our lives. Amen.